Chapter 2. There was nothing to trouble the army on the march north, this being a part of the world unused to war. The various towns which Flavius approached, lacking walls and faced with overwhelming force, quickly surrendered. In the present conqueror, they found a man who had long ago set his stamp on what his troops were allowed to do in recently taken territory. No despoilation. Anything acquired paid for, women treated with respect. And he had been known to hang transgressors in the past if his strictures were ignored. His army, and that included his senior commanders, had been subjected to the same speech before they departed Sicily, one he had assailed them with on previous campaigns, a special emphasis being addressed to the newly joined troops under Constantinus. The land they were going to was being brought back to its rightful ownership, that of the true Roman Emperor. The people they would encounter, Goths and their allies apart, were not to be treated as enemies, but responsibilities. And, just in case anyone harboured doubts, there were sound reasons for kindness. Required to move at speed, and not favoured by numbers, they comprised a host that was in search of a quick result. They also had to be fed, and there was no time for foraging or forced extraction of supplies. Captured cities would pay tribute to the new rulers, and that money would be used to purchase what they needed, with word flying ahead to tell other cities they had nothing to fear. Plunder would come in time, but it would be taken from the Goths, not the Italians. Two Isaurians, who did not heed the message, paid with their lives for their transgression. The army, marching past the tree that held the two swinging corpses to drive home the point. That second-in-command Constantinus did not agree with either policy of the Belisarian reaction was plain, if unspoken. It was also ignored. The army sought as much as possible to stay near the coast and in touch with the accompanying fleet, not always possible, as the old Roman road moved inland. Even if it was not in perfect repair everywhere, there was still enough of the old pave to permit fast travel, and with no enemy close by, Ebrimuth had assured Flavius that the main Goth army was still in Ravenna, it was possible to eschew caution in favour of progress. There was no need for a cavalry screen. The only people out ahead were his own surveyors and foresters, the former selecting campsites into which the soldiers following behind would find lines and markers laid out within which to raise their tents. The foresters would have spent the day gathering timber on which the army could cook the supplies that came in the commissary wagons bringing up the rear. Naturally, there was a section set aside for the commanders, usually in the centre of the encampment and on a slight mound, and it was here that Flavius Belisarius would entertain his closest advisers and share with them his thoughts, always taking a chance to drive home his message that if this was conquest, it came with duties. As for what lay behind the day's march, anything pertaining to that fell to Procopius and Solomon, his domesticus. With a substantial number of clerks to aid him, the general's faithful secretary and assessor, with his sharp legal mind, was required to produce a quick summary of the nature of the provinces once ruled from Rome. That included titles to land, expected annual yields, population numbers broken down by sex and age, resources such as iron, tin and salt, all of which, once passed by the commander, would be sent back to Constantinople so that Justinian should know the value of his conquests. Solomon was expert at supply, it being no easy task to feed a host the size of that his master led, and to him fell the task of purchasing food. If it was a progress, not a march, that ended abruptly when they came to Naples, which not only had sound and formidable walls, but a Goth garrison, albeit one few in number. As his fleet sailed into the huge bay, Flavius sent word that they were to press as close as they could to the Neapolitan sea wall, but to stay